hello.
Wow, this is excellent. And for those wondering, that is not Brendan on the other side of the podcast microphone this week. This is Alan. It's another episode of Not a Thing podcast. You may have seen that this week we had to do some special stuff. Last week we did some special stuff where Brendan and I did a podcast, and we're talking over actually Citrix GoToMeeting. If they'd like to sponsor us, that'd be great. I work for them, though. They might have some issues with that. I don't know. Anyway, I'm still not in the U.S. I'm still not within a reasonable distance to podcast with Brendan. So instead, we've invited a great friend of mine and Brendan's as well, Cordelia Clifton Holst. Say hi.
Hello. I'm very happy to be here.
This is excellent. This
well,
is excellent.
I live here, but oh. I'm happy that you're here.
Yes, this is now, I guess, my third trip into Norway.
Yes.
I was joking that we didn't see a lot of sightseeing this time around, but we did a lot of fun stuff.
You saw a lot of pies.
Today. Yes. What is this pie that you speak of?
We have now, in the last 3 weeks, opened Norway's first pie shop.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been met with open arms, I feel.
That's
really
excellent. It's really, really cool. And I'm not just saying that because I helped, like, shovel something like 200 boxes of pies together today.
350.
Oh. Well, I was trying to be modest.
We had a big catering today. Our first and last catering, possibly. And Alan was an integral part of the catering staff, moving boxes. Happily, the catering location was within walking distance from the kitchen.
Yes.
So we were able to ensure hot pies to all of the hungry people who had been at TEDx Oslo.
That's amazing. I love TEDx. I love the idea of spreading ideas, which is really what it's about. And what was really cool was the theme this year was about rebel companies, and I think your company, Hello Good Pie, absolutely fits that kind of mold.
We think so too. One of the things that we're really proud of with Hello Good Pie is that we're trying to do things very differently than are done otherwise in the Norwegian food industry. My partner and I, neither of us are Norwegians, so it's easy for us not to sort of fall into the regular way of doing things. And in Norway, there's two main food service providers that provide over 92% of all of the raw ingredients that go into any food you eat at a restaurant.
Mm.
They have a great distribution logistic, which means that it's really easy for restaurants to be able to order online from them and get regular deliveries. But the downside about this is that any restaurant you go in, there's the same two kinds of tomatoes, mm-hmm. and exactly the same salad mix and the same kind of meat. And what we're trying to do is to work with local Norwegian suppliers that don't have distribution through these big contracts because either their ingredients are seasonal, so they're not able to provide year-round supplies, or because they're organic, so they're not able to commit to the kinds of volumes that the large companies would require for national distribution. So working with them, we're very happy because pie is such a flexible product. Anything can go in pie. So when we have cantarelle season in Norway,
mm-hmm.
we can make pie with chicken and cantarelle. Wow. And we did so for 3 weeks, and when the season was over, which just happened last week, we stop and we can. So we're really happy about it. We think pie is really flexible. It allows us to do things differently, and that's a little bit rebellious, possibly.
No, that's absolutely rebellious. That's rebellious in the U.S. I mean, I think it's very easy to get to go for the low cost option because that's the thing that they think will generate the most sales.
Mm.
But I think more and more people are noticing that things taste different. Yes.
They have mouths, yeah, these people, right, and taste buds.
Right, and I think, you know, food is one of those things that you can and should take somewhat personally and really, really invest in why and where and all of the things that come from it. I mean, you know, I think there's some talk of, you know, social responsibility with, you know, oh, this iPhone is made in China and it hurts this many people. But food is a much more direct connection to, I mean, it's a much more obvious connection of where something comes from and how it's produced and how it's put together and you eating it, right?
Yes, exactly. And there's food that's low quality where you can be actually hurting your body. But then there's sort of, we like to think of ourselves in the sort of more food fun area where, okay, we would never be putting in a lot of preservatives or doing things that are heavily chemicaled. Of course not. But even more than that, we just want to have a really good time. So for us, changing our ingredients often is more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that as we begin to sort of make it clear to people what kind of good pie they can expect, that our customers will be open to the changes and think of it also as adding to the fun, instead of being sad that their pie that they expected from last week isn't there anymore. So there's a bit of learning together and good communication and discussion. But we're really happy because our first shop is in the food hall, Norway's first food hall. And the people running the food hall, I think, have done an excellent job of trying to keep it an arena for food-related discussions as well as, of course, something to eat and raw ingredients. So there's an open area in the middle with a stage, and they have put together a program over the next 4 months with various themes that go into all these discussions about where food is sourced. There's some Norwegian cultures cultural sort of habits that are quite interesting. One of them is what they call a matpakke.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bag lunch, basically.
Okay.
And this bag lunch is such a cultural phenomenon because it's institutionalized. In the beginning of, Norway's 100 years old, a little more than that, and I think it was in the 20s, some legislature was written to help raise the standard of living, and in schools, people were required to have this matpakke, a bag lunch, and then they explained what it is. It's two open-faced sandwiches with the butter, thick bread with whole grains and butter and cheese and a slice of meat and some fruit, possibly, or a vegetable, and maybe sliced egg or some liver pate. These kinds of things. So you get some meat, you get some cheese, you get some carbs, you get some fat. Some
veggies.
You get some veggies. And this has, like, sustained the Norwegian culture and made them very hearty. And it's really like an institution. Now, what was recently, in the last couple of years, maybe 10 years, pointed out by some food researchers is that the tradition and the institution of the matpakke actually has stagnated Norwegian food enjoyment over time, because if you have a whole country where everyone has a bag lunch, then no one ever eats food at a restaurant. And this means that all restaurants must be able to make their business work with a dinner-only offer.
Oh.
So instead of being able to spread out the costs of rent and staffing over two mealtimes, you only get one mealtime to spread those costs out, which means dinner is very expensive. And since dinner is expensive, people don't go out to eat dinner very often. Do you see?
There's a chain reaction all the way down the line. Sure.
So this is a problem. And so they do everything they can to cut costs, like going with the biggest provider who gets bulk rates on tomatoes from Spain, and those are the only tomatoes you can have. So there's like this sort of catch-22 with pricing and distribution and the tradition of the cold lunch. And we've been really wondering, okay, when are people going to eat pie? Are they going to eat it for dinner? Is it going to be mostly dessert pies we sell? Because we sell both savory and sweet pies. Mm-hmm. But much to our glee, everybody eats pie for lunch. We sell out before it's 3 o'clock.
That's great.
Which is great. So I think the tides are really turning, and people are ready for some alternatives to the bag lunch.
Yeah, a definite theme that Brennan and I have noticed in a lot of the topics that we talk about, it always comes around to kind of a generational change and kind of a culture shift towards more niche-oriented, you know, foods and consumption and of pretty much anything. I mean, internet, TV, like watching TV. There's a shift away from kind of a broadcast culture where everyone gets kind of whatever they get, and that's all they get, to much more of a choose. I can seek out what I want and what works for me and what I like or what's different. And I think the options are growing in that case too. So I think you're right on the, you know, you're really well timed for that as well.
We hope so. And like I was saying, this food hall is such an excellent place to be because these discussions are going on. So it's not just hungry people who are looking for food, but it's also hungry people who are thinking about the food and talking about the food and wondering, oh, I'm eating a warm lunch right now. Isn't that crazy? And we think that's really nice to be a part of that conversation.
Yeah. So I have to ask,
yes,
why did you go all the way to Norway to open up a pie shop? Is there a step in here that I've missed?
I came on the love boat. My husband is Norwegian, as you know.
Oh, am I playing dumb in order to increase the length of this podcast? Oh, no.
I met my husband in San Francisco, and we moved back to Norway during the Bush years.
So you actually left. You're one of those people that was the joke, right? Oh, if Bush gets elected, I'm moving to Canada.
We were out of there, man. So we came, and Norway's a great country. There's a lot of social benefits that I know are talked about kind of negatively in the U.S., but I've enjoyed them very much myself. So we came to Norway now 9 years ago. And the lack of pie has been apparent since the first day. Everybody, you know, there's some pie makers make pie at home, but there's no pie shops. You can't get pie at a bakery. I mean, in California, there are pie shops. But I think in, like, England and Australia, there are even more pie shops. Like, it's a thing. It's a special thing of its all of its own. I know that in California and also in Australia, there's a lot of sort of bakeries that will also make pie and also make bread. Sure. But there's still there's a thing that's a pie shop, its own unique thing. And we really felt like pie is so good. It makes people happy. Mm-hmm. And what do these people in Norway need more than comfort food? I don't know. That's what they need. Comfort in the winter. And Norway has really good raw ingredients. The seafood, the lamb, the berries, the mushrooms. So during the summer and fall, when it's blueberry season, you can just walk out in the hills. Even you live in Oslo, you take the subway up to the hillside and to the market, to the forest, they call it, and you just pick berries on the side of the trail, blueberries. And every sort of stand on the side of the road sells Norwegian strawberries, Norwegian blueberries, cherries. So all these things will be lovely in pie. Those are classics.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. If I hadn't already had, like, every pie that you had on the menu, I would be hungry for some pie.
We finally managed to fill you with pie in these 2 days.
And yet I'm sure I will have another pie very, very shortly then. I know there's one tucked away.
That's true. So a post-podcast pie. No, but we really like the raw ingredients in Norway. We think Norway has lovely quality ingredients, and it's the ingredients that make a good pie.
Well, I think the people have something to do with it too. You have to be fairly driven. You have to be willing to work with the system as it is, and you have to be really tenacious and definitely just a touch of crazy.
Crazy. Just tiny bit crazy.
Just a touch.
Well, I've never started a business before, and my sort of general outlook on it is a little bit of how hard can it be? Like, you make a mistake, you figure out it's a mistake, you find out who can help you fix it, or you think, I can't make a mistake on this, and then you get a professional in.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a team of international people from pie countries, both working on the physical shop as well as on the investor side,
mm-hmm.
pie believers. But sort of our philosophy with working together as a team of friends and peers is that the person who knows the most about it decides.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a project manager in lots of different projects, strategic and also production projects for marketing for many years. And it's really hard to agree to that philosophy at some corporation because there's branding guidelines or there's somebody's wife who said they didn't like that or whatever. But with our company, we just said, okay, this is the way it's going to be. The person who knows the most decides. So our interior architect, she decides.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there's the budget, which is the decider of the decider. Overall decider of all. But if she can figure out a way to make her vision work within the budget, then we do it that way.
Yeah.
And every now and then there'd be times when I would think, oh, I don't want it to be that way. But then I just think, you know what? She has a vision and she is very talented and I trust her. And I didn't go to RISD. So what do I know about interior architecture? Mm-hmm. Like, I have to trust her. And that's been really lovely for me because the results have been beautiful. She's just an example. The same with our graphic designer. The same with my partner who develops all the products. It's his decision. He needs to decide. Our graphic designer has been hilarious, Boris, because I'll say, I think I need a sign that says these things, and I need it to be like this. And then he, and can you print it up? Can we get it printed? And then he'll think about it for a while, and he'll be like, I think it should be handwritten. And I think you should have a stamp. And I'm like, that's not graphic design. That's just mom and pop shop stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he pushes me on it. Well, that's because as a small business, our biggest advantage is that we are small.
Yeah.
And we can handwrite it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can stamp it. And big companies can't do those things.
Right.
And they look so genuine because they are genuine. So don't have some overly designed, fancy thing from Boris. Have something that Boris has envisioned, but that we make ourselves.
Sure.
And I think that advice has been really good. So we try to sort of listen to the experts and all work together.
Yeah, that's great because I mean I had a small IT consulting business for myself briefly, and it's that kind of thing, right? I don't have design skills from that perspective. I needed to go find find someone to make business cards. I mean,
yeah,
the things that you know that show off who I am. I need to be able to
present
make that
yourself.
Yeah, right. And it's. And I don't know how to do business taxes,
no.
And I don't know how to do this. And it was all learn as you go. And I think you're right. I mean, to be successful, you have to surround yourself with people that have some measure of that kind of success already.
Yes.
To at least consult.
So they
consult
can think about it and least, give you advice.
Right.
And it's not worse than like, okay, you don't know how to do your business taxes. You get an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get along with your accountant and your accountant, you know, thinks about you and helps you and wants you to succeed. My accountant now calls me like, how was sales? Like, he's rooting for us.
This is great.
So it, I think it's not as scary as it could be. But one thing I was surprised about in the sort of getting the business together part is that, in America, I know that it's not this way now, but I grew up at a time where I felt that, that businesses could get loans or there was some kind of way to sort of get small business loans.
Mm-hmm.
Not so here. You can't get any kind of line of credit at all until you've had, you know, a semi-annual report or an annual report showing profits, basically. Mm-hmm. There's no credit. And I, in the beginning, when I was writing the business plan and trying to figure out the financing plan, I was asking people, you know, like, what's the word for a financial advisor? Like, what's the word for an investment bank?
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I did get an accountant who said to me, there is no such thing as an investment bank. There is a commercial bank and there is a savings bank, but investment banks don't exist in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Which is possibly why Norway is so stable and never has any of these ups and downs. But, you know, they have the Glass-Steagall Act big time, and there is no investing with savings money or pension or anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the money doesn't move. And this is also possibly a reason why big companies stay big and it's hard for small companies to start.
Sure.
And I'm proud to say, actually, from the pie-loving nations, our investors, we've got one Norwegian. Because it was an international effort, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's people who believe in pie know it's going to be good, can envision it, and
people who believe in you and your team of folks to get everything
too.
Together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's what we ended up doing. But boy, I tried. I wrote to every sort of grant program and tried to get into these. Forums where you can present your business plan to potential investors.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not interested in food industry. They're not interested in like restaurant. There's a lot of focus on tech.
Sure.
And energy.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think that's a little bit sad too, because although tech and energy are can be big profits. I think food is such a quality of life issue.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of room for improvement in Norway.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. I think that's it's a very kind of common American kind of thing
thought
to look for where you can make money in between the margins,
yeah,
rather than, you know, instead of hitting that home run, let me hit all the singles I can get.
Exactly.
Right. And you can totally do well financially doing that if you can find your niche.
Hmm.
And on top of it, if it's that competitive at that level, you're going to it means there's a lot of people that want that space too.
Hmm.
And you're gonna find it's just gonna take off if you can get even the slightest foothold there.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I know. And well, it's just I thought the financing part was probably the most challenging, because even though I read a lot of like Entrepreneur Now and like whatever sort of
Who Moved My Cheese. No, that's something else.
A lot of people talking about how it is to start their own business, like, and I spent a lot of time down at the small business bureau or whatever it's called, the Norwegian Small Business Bureau, talking with their advisors, going through the business plan and mm-hmm. what's our strategy to move forward and this kind of thing, and these sort of you don't really know about how it's going to go until you're doing it.
You're in it, right.
One of the things we wanted to try was crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's, what's that? What's
Kickstarter, Indiegogo, exactly. Sure.
Yes. So, okay, none of them operate in Norway, mm-hmm. but we thought we can try to make something that's at least for us that has the same principles. So we put together a campaign on our Facebook page, and we were, like, with our finger on the button to make a big push for it. My husband, who's a writer, has written everything for the pie shop. He had press releases about our crowdfunding that mm-hmm. we're going to go to the biggest financial newspaper in Norway.
Wow.
And we were ready to go. So we put it on Facebook. It's on Facebook for a week, and we're about ready to send our press releases. And I get a call from the food hall, who I've signed a contract with.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, "Aren't you funded?"
Oh.
And they say, "Because we've got a long list of other actors who are interested in getting in here, and they're calling us saying, why did you give a contract to somebody who's doesn't have the backing?"
Mm-hmm.
And I say, no, we have the backing.
Uh-oh. Should this not go out on the air?
It's fine. I mean, we did have some backing,
sure.
but we weren't done.
Sure.
The financial plan wasn't fit. Like, I knew what the investment budget was, and we were about half capitalized.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not good enough. And I think, holy crap, I haven't thought clearly enough or had the right sort of understanding of how everyone will perceive
mm-hmm.
what we do.
Yeah.
Of course, our suppliers aren't going to want to sell to us. The food hall's not going to want to give us a spot. There's going to be a lot of repercussions
sure.
if we push big on a crowdfunding.
Yeah.
So we just had to put a hat on that thing and not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine how we would have foreseen that. Because I was thinking, like, we just go with a three-pronged strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Crowdsourcing, grant writing, and stock selling.
Sure.
But it turned out to be all stock selling.
Mm-hmm.
Because we couldn't work publicly.
Yeah.
I had to work under the radar.
Right, right.
No one could know what we were doing. And this, I would never have thought of this.
Mm-hmm.
I would never have thought that, especially as a marketer, where you think, well, if you can just get the information out, you can always find someone who's interested.
Sure.
Oh, I'm not allowed to get the information out. Yikes. So this was a real challenge and a real sort of unforeseen consequence of, starting my own business. I didn't understand mm-hmm. that it would be that way.
There were some
surprises. That was one of the biggest.
Yeah. But it's really a testament to our shared education. We both went to Cal Poly,
mm-hmm.
whose motto is learn by doing.
That's the truth.
Okay, coming back. What was I saying?
About Cal Poly, learn by doing.
Cal Poly's motto is learn by making mistakes, readjust,
you know?
Right. Exactly. And I think that's absolutely true. If there's one thing I took from Cal Poly, it's learn by doing. I probably took a few more than one thing from there. It was a good education.
It was a good education. I'm proud we went there. I think of it often. I think, you know, you learn by doing, but you also learn by challenges and by failing and by hitting a wrong turn and thinking, mm-hmm. okay, that plan's not going to work.
Yeah.
What's the new plan?
Yeah, but it's for me, that's the thing that differentiates the people that make it and the people that don't is mm-hmm. that when something fails, it's the, okay, that failed, let me learn from it and
yes.
do and continue to do
what
I wanted to do.
Of course we continue on,
right.
yes, but
right.
just a different way.
Yeah.
You can't let it derail you, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always so easy either, because it's just your own imagination. There's not anybody more who can help you understand what your options are. I mean, you can talk to people, but you have to be creative too.
I think my favorite line for that was from a book, and I'm gonna forget who wrote it. It's gonna
No.
It's gonna come back.
It's gonna come back. It'll come back to me later. But the catchphrase in the book is there's this old kind of grizzled, like former Marine, or I mean he's a Marine. You're always a Marine. But he was a Marine, and the thing that like stuck to him, and he would just say this whenever anything was adverse, or kind of messed up. It was like, show some fucking adaptability.
Yes.
And that's really what it is.
It's so true. It's so true. You just have to turn around and do it different then.
Yeah.
Just do it different.
Yeah.
Okay, not that. What about this? What about this? What about this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how it's been through the whole project. And I'm really, really happy we made it. And the shop looks great, and the product is really good. And I think it's going to be a really nice company.
Yeah, I'm super happy for you. It blows my mind. I mean, I knew that there was kind of a like let's do this, let's pull this together kind of.
Yeah.
And for me, I mean, I have no concept of what it takes to open a physical shop. I mean, my business was essentially me going to places, so I had no office. Mm. As computer things go, they're very transient kinds of things, and so, like, you fix it, and there's no physical manifestation of that fix. It's just,
this works now.
Yeah, right.
Which is rad.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, there's obviously, you know, some goodness in there, but you know, to produce how many pies per day? 500 pies per day.
From scratch in this little kitchen, smaller than most people's apartment kitchens, really. It's very impressive, but that's all Pierre, my partner. He's a logistics master.
Mm-hmm.
So his way is that he does things in waves. So he comes in the morning, he does all the meat, braises all the lamb, gets everything going, and while one thing's cooking, he preps the next thing.
Sure.
So that's what's nice about pie also, is that you can prep all the fill.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got this super cool pie press from England.
Mm-hmm.
This was me. I did do this. I found this pie press because I've been a hobby pie maker for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I've had one or two of your hobby pies.
I'm sure.
I can attest to them being very good as well.
I feel I'm ashamed of them now that I have Pierre's pies. But I do know a thing or two about pie because I learned it from my mom. And The worst part about pie making is the endless rolling. If you're going to be making a lot of pies, you're endlessly rolling with this rolling pin. Or mm-hmm. I visited a bunch of pie shops in California and in England. And there's a bunch of the main way of producing a lot of flat dough is dough sheeters.
Mm-hmm.
And dough sheeters are not that rad because they're huge, for one thing. And for another thing, excuse me, they overwork the dough, so it gets kind of gummy.
Sure.
So,
Is that what I think they are? They're just big rollers?
Rollers, okay. Yeah.
You just push the lump through and...
Yes, and then it keeps getting flattened all these different ways, kind of, and
yeah.
It's not that great. So I found online a pie press where you put a lump of dough in a set of dies,
mm-hmm.
and then the press presses the dough out to a form.
Mm-hmm.
This is awesome because it happens in one smooth
one
movement.
Motion, yeah.
So the dough doesn't become, well, Pierre could probably explain the chemical parts of it, but I guess it gets more gluten, actually,
yes.
The more you overwork
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And this makes it gummy.
Mm-hmm.
So the pie press is good for dough because it is more flaky and delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good for production because it's small.
Yeah.
It's manual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just human strength pressing it out, which is cool. We like that. So it's like it's a little cheat. It's a help. It's different, you know. It's not rolling it out,
mm-hmm.
but it's still arm work.
Yeah,
and we have to lid. We lid by hand,
uh-huh.
So you still get that handmade crimping. So we love the pie press, and that is really helping us. And that little pie press can press out 400 bottoms in an hour, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So the pie press doesn't hold us back. We have an oven where we can fit in 15 trays of pies, each which hold 8 pies.
Mm-hmm. So quick math. 120.
Yes. So this doesn't hold us back.
Okay.
That's a lot of pies that can go through the oven.
Yeah.
So what's holding us back right now is the amount of dough we can make in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we have ordered a huge dough machine. We need a massive mixer, which we didn't think we had room for, but we've decided to forego tables and chairs in our shop and just set up a huge dough machine.
Mm.
So that's coming in 2 weeks, and we're really looking forward to it.
That's cool. So it's only better things to come, is what it sounds like.
It's only better things to come.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Are you tired of talking about pot?
No. No. No, but now I'm actually...
Now you know everything about pie.
Now I'm actually hungry for pie. So it's... we can move on to that. I do have a little bit... Because we do have a little bit of time left. I want to do a memory check here to see if you remember when we met.
Oh my God, Alan. I don't know.
I mean, it was at Cal Poly.
You must have been the general manager of the station.
So I was the general manager of our radio station, but that's not when we met.
It isn't?
No.
Did we meet at a party at Scott Cody's house?
Another mutual friend and someone that we should probably have on the podcast at some point.
Oh,
but
yeah, that'd be good.
So we met on not your graveyard shift, but your trial by fire.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, yikes.
So for those not those not KCPR DJs, the process is you go through a quarter of training where you go to a class. It's actually a one unit class.
Scott
offered
was my
by
teacher.
What?
Yes.
It's a one unit class offered through the journalism department, and there was a weekly lab where you would essentially go and do half of a show with a radio DJ, and then at the end of the quarter you would take a test. And then the last thing was the trial by fire, which is a an hour show in the middle of the night with no help. And there would be someone who would administer this test and write down all of the
things you did wrong,
all of the things you did right, and all of the things you did wrong. But you know, it would be like, did these songs segue into these songs?
Is it true you were my trial by
so
fire?
So I was.
Of course, you were.
Absolutely,
on the other side of the glass.
Right. So you did okay.
I guess I did okay.
You did okay. You were a DJ for a few years. That worked out.
It's crazy when I think back about college and like, okay, now I'm gonna be 35 this year, and when I do things, I really try hard.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think back about college, I think, like, I didn't try. I can't remember trying at all. I was like, flying by the seat of my pants. Like, mm-hmm. I can't believe I even got through college. What an accomplishment. I really, really studied. I remember this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I studied well. Like, I spent the night in the library and sort of, you know.
Not the library, the bar, the library.
Not the bar, the library.
You were Frog and Peach person. I know.
I was a Frog and Peach person. But you know, like, I was so inefficient. I was such a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would put in hours and hours and hours, but it wasn't the same as actually, like, getting it done.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would never go back. I'm so much happier being an adult, you know? I would never go back. But speaking of the Frog and Peach Pub, I did lift a brilliant idea from them for the pie shop.
Oh.
When we were in at San Luis...
Mm-hmm.
Frog and Peach Pub had a buy a beer wall.
Yes.
Which I have now lifted and put in my pie shop. A buy a pie wall.
Excellent.
Where friends can buy a pie,
mm-hmm.
in Frog and Peach case, it was a beer, for a friend who wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And at San Luis, it's so small, you know, so that you'd kind of stumble in. And it was before cell phones or anything. So that was really, it was the only way to do it, was chalk on the wall.
Yeah.
You could see, like, oh, Alan bought me a beer. What? Ah, that's me up on the wall. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, get your free beer. So now we've done that. So we write, buy a pie,
mm-hmm.
to Alan from Julie. And then Alan can be like, oh, Julie bought me a beer. Or bought me a pie. But we've added a sort of digital aspect to it. So we take people's phone numbers and take a picture of the wall and send them an MMS and explain, like, your friends bought you a pie.
That's
hello
fantastic.
Good pie, come down and get it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having a little bit of fun, but that's thanks to Frog and Peach Pub. The brilliance at Frog and Peach.
Awesome. Cool. Well, this has been hilarious and great, and I can't wait to get into that pie, and I might have to have a beer too. So we'll
good idea. We'll buy you a pie out. And a beer.
So this is gonna get posted like real soon. I'll send you a note.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Thanks for having me over in Norway. It was a really fantastic time again.
You're welcome back at any time.
Cool. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week, where Brendan and I will be back together again, hopefully in the same room.
In sunny California.
Yeah. Well, it's nice. It's all right.
It's pretty nice there. No jealousy.
Anytime you want to come hang out in California.
Hey, man, I got a pie shop to run.
Right on. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.